The following podcast is offered freely through the Insight and Meditation Community of Washington and by Jonathan Faust. To learn more or to make a donation to support this work, please go to www.jonathanfaust.com.
A while back, I was asked to facilitate a difficult conversation between two people in a relationship. And there was a obviously, they had called me in because things were pretty desperate. So I asked one person, I asked the fellow to just to give me a little bit of background. And he began to try to describe his side of things. And he wasn't particularly skillful, but I could really sense his desire to be clear, to be honest, you know, to kind of get to the bottom of it. And even though he was stumbling a little bit, I actually felt really touched by his sincerity. So after he said his piece, I turned to his partner and I said, having heard all of this, what do you feel? And immediately she said, I feel he's an idiot. That's not quite the feeling word, so... So tonight I'd like to talk a little bit about this process of moving from what we think to what we feel. And to talk a little bit about the role of the body when it comes not just to spiritual practice, but to transformation. So I'd like to talk a little bit about how the body is so important to bring you in the present moment awareness, a very powerful tool. But also how through mindfulness of the body, you begin to see into the nature of change. And you begin to see into the nature of suffering. And you even begin to see into the nature of the self. Remembering these qualities of change, the relationship between change and suffering, and this inquiry into who I truly am, has made a huge difference in my practice, and I hope this might be helpful for you. So through the body, you enter into the present moment. Eckhart Tolle, who wrote The Power of Now and was such a global sensation, was giving a talk about, you know, the power of the moment, and someone asked him a question, and they said, I hear what you're saying, it makes sense, I have no clue how to do it. And Eckhart said, can you feel your hand? And the guy said, yeah, I can feel my hand. And Eckhart said, congratulations. Have you noticed times when you can be so utterly lost in thought, and then suddenly you're back, and you can feel the breath, you can feel the aliveness of sound? You've arrived through this shift from thinking to the actual experience of what's right here. It's so simple, and yet, of course, not easy. And I invite you during the course of this talk to check in with your felt sense of the here and now, the experience of breath. Come back again and again, whenever you remember. I'll be leading some short meditations and reflections through the course of the talk. And perhaps we can begin right now. If you like, you can close your eyes. We've explored numerous anchors in our process, and you might just in these moments, when you turn your attention to the experience of your breath, where do you feel it the most predominant right now? Is the length of your in-breath different than the length of your out-breath? When you turn your attention to the sounds around you right now, can you experience the sounds? Can you feel the vibration of the sounds? If you bring your attention into your palms and fingers and thumbs, what's happening there right now? Can you sense any tingling or pulse or vibration or warmth or coolness or subtle energy? And in this moment, can you sense the quality of here in your body? If you like, you can let your eyes open, and you're welcome to remain with your eyes closed, whatever feels most comfortable for you. This, of course, is our intention, to be connected, to hold a moment-to-moment connection of the aliveness of the body. And of course, when you focus on that, you begin to notice how you're not aware, how you're lost in thought. And of course, most of us, most of the time, are utterly lost in our narrative of the conversation, of trying to hold our story together. If you're ever bored, just Google texting and walking accidents. It's quite humorous and a little tragic just to see people texting and walking off piers and into fountains and all sorts of things. We disconnect from our experience. We disconnect from this living, breathing body all the time. And when we do, we feel lost. We suffer. We make choices from our head rather than including our kinesthetic intuition, our gut feel, our full aliveness. So I love this definition of meditation, a two-part definition. The first is the moment-to-moment noticing of what's actually happening. And then the noticing of your relationship to what's happening. And it becomes quite evident when we turn our attention to the body. Raise your hand if you've ever looked at yourself in the mirror and had a negative thought. Anyone? Anyone? The self-derision we have toward the body is quite overpowering sometimes. We tend to hold our bodies with contempt. We want to whip our body into shape. We want to push it to new limits. We want to starve ourselves to get to the right weight. And there's something here about our practice, the opportunity to make friends with your body, to listen deeply. Pat talked last night about these five energies. When these five energies are present, it's impossible to be present. The different flavors of aversion, of anger, judgment, blame, the different flavors of craving, of wanting, of planning, of fantasy, the different flavors of worry, of restlessness, of sloth and torpor, of doubt and self-criticism. And he talked of how on some level these energies are trying to protect us. They're about us wanting to connect, wanting to not make dumb decisions in life. In that same way, your body is here to serve you. It is doing its best. And this is a practice of slowing down and honoring your body, honoring what is arising, and listening deeply. And the body only lives in the here and now. It's the mind that goes wandering. Whenever you awaken to the senses, you've truly arrived. So every time you come back to your anchor, you're here. Which reminds me, there's a story of someone who went on a retreat with an Asian teacher, and the teacher kept saying, come back to your anchor. Come back to your anchor. And he thought, my God, it's been 10 times. Okay, I've come back to my anger. What's the point? So if anyone's confused, it's anchor, not anger. And what becomes quite interesting for me is when you come back to your anchor, you come back to the present. But you not only come present, you have the opportunity to begin to unwind deep hidden tensions. So why are we practicing? I think Tara put it so well on opening night. that we're practicing to experience and see reality. The Buddha said, within this fathom-long body and mind is found all the teachings. And yet we override the body. It becomes a machine. We have managed care, plastic surgery, artificial limbs. We work under artificial light. We pack ourselves in little cubicles. We distract ourselves with fast food. We lose a connection to our body. And now you're bringing your attention to it fully. You're noticing when it feels tight, when it feels heavy, when it feels light, when it feels relaxed. You're beginning to see how it responds when you're in fear or in anxiety. You begin to sense when it feels strong, when it feels weak, what it's like when it feels pain. And you can practice this to remember within this fathom-long body is found all the teachings. So the Buddha spoke of how when you cultivate this moment-to-moment awareness of the body, you may begin to see into three characteristics of reality. I'd like to talk about these, and we'll have some short reflections for each one. He spoke of how you begin to see into the nature of change. In one of our small groups, when Yogi was saying how at 5:30 a.m. he was filled with such a feeling of gratitude and excitement that he was here, that this amazing day lay ahead. And by 7:30 he was thinking, I think I made a terrible mistake. Have you noticed this? How quickly, how like quicksilver the mind is, constantly changing. And the body is in a constant state of change, often against our wishes. Maintaining your body in a sense of just balance and comfort is a high maintenance job. It's too cold, it's too warm, it needs fluids, it needs solids, it needs to eliminate. And begin to notice as you age that hair stops growing where you want it, it starts growing where you don't want it. And life becomes an ongoing fight with gravity, and gravity wins. And you know you're getting old when you hear your favorite song on an elevator. My dad marked the aging process. I called him once. I said, as he was getting up there, his years, I said, how are you doing? And he said, well, he said, I've reached that age where I can now hide my own Easter eggs. So our health, of course, is a constant struggle. There's this great story I remembered today of these three old guys who were complaining about their health. And one guy says, it's just terrible. My digestion is terrible. I said, I wake up in the morning, I just can't eliminate, I'm straining, it's just horrible. And the second guy says, I have it worse. So, I mean, I take all these supplements and I can't get anything moving until like late morning. And this third guy says, I've really got it bad. He said, somewhere between 5:30 and 6, so I have a full bowel movement. His two friends said, what's the problem? He said, I don't wake up till 7. I just had to work that one in, I'm sorry. But we become hyper aware of the changes in our body. But it goes beyond just that. When you pay attention, it's not just your body that changes. Everything seems to be changing. And this becomes a very, very key part of our practice, to recognize impermanence, to recognize change. It's a fundamental aspect of the practice. So let's do a short reflection. If you like, you can close your eyes. And you might let your attention move into your breath. And for these next moments, just sense how intimately you can track this fact of change. How subtly, how intimately can you feel everything that is moving and changing in your breath? And you may notice how if you relax even more, if you relax even deeper, you can sense perhaps even more subtly, more intimately, everything that is changing in your breath. You might shift your attention to sound. How intimately can you register everything that is changing through this sense door of sound? If you let your awareness flow or flood into your palms and fingers and thumbs, again, relax and feel this fact of change. And again, feel free to remain with your eyes closed, or if you like, you can open your eyes. Change is one of the characteristics of reality. Anything that is born out of causes and conditions is subject to change. And everything is now moving so fast in our world. You may be familiar with high-frequency trading, where traders try to get an advantage of a few milliseconds before someone else to make a trade. And recently now there are these trading companies that have moved to from optic fiber to microwave so they can gain that slightest advantage. Slowing down helps us to recognize just how everything is changing. Your body is constantly being replenished with new cells. The body in which you're sitting, most of the cells were not here a year ago. They have changed. They have been replenished. So seeing change helps us to recognize the second characteristic of reality. Now, through the body, by paying attention to the body, you begin to see more and more clearly into the nature of suffering. A friend was telling me how they threw this birthday party for their six-year-old son. They brought all his friends. They were singing songs. They were playing games, blowing out the candles, and his son burst into tears. And he took his son aside, and he said, what's going on? And he said, it's going to be a whole year until I can experience this again. It's such a clear insight into the nature of the mind. That we resist what we love having to change. Now I find as I get older, it's more of like, oh my God, it's my birthday again? Isn't it interesting how our relationship to time changes? So we begin to see that our relationship to what is changing directly impacts our experience of life, our stress, our suffering, our dissatisfaction, our unsteadiness. If something is changing and we don't want it to the degree we resist it, we will experience stress. If something isn't changing and we resist it, again, we experience stress and suffering. It's a beautiful sharing in one of our small circles of of a yogi who was doing walking meditation and very slow and mindful and experienced something unpleasant. And she noticed that she was kind of unconsciously walking faster with some subtle assumption that if she walked faster, the walking period would go by quicker. I love that story. It's just, it's how we live our lives. So change keeps happening. It certainly becomes more and more evident the more you slow down and pay attention, how one meditation just never, it's never really the same. It's the stream continues to flow. So change keeps happening, and we resist it. We try to control our experience. One of the best analogies I saw was going into the grocery store, and the grocery carts that have the little spot for the little kids with the steering wheel, and just seeing this little kid there, going around the grocery store, and this little kid thinks he's actually steering the grocery cart. That's us. So anything born out of causes and conditions is subject to change. So much of your experience is in a constant process of flux. How you are relating to your experience determines the degree to which you will feel stress, dissatisfaction, or suffering. One of the beautiful things about being on retreat is you get to slow this process down dramatically. You get to see what's arising. You get to look closely at how you're holding it, the attitude in your mind. You begin to see your reactive patterns. And have you begun to see some of your patterns of reactivity and how they're showing up? Sometimes there's equanimity. There's the capacity to watch the fluctuations. And sometimes you get lost in these energies. You get lost in aversion, lost in planning and fantasy, lost in worry, lost in this disconnection and the sloth and torpor, or lost in doubt or paralyzed by self-criticism. The waking up out of that is a miracle, in a sense. The capacity to see all the traditional, habitual ways that you get caught. So what you have control over is how you respond to what is there. There's a line from Ram Dass who was talking about an ad that he saw. And in this ad, it said, some people call these aging spots. I call them ugly. It was some ad for some cover-up cream. He looked at it and he said, like, why isn't it just some call these ugly? I call them aging spots. We have the capacity to reframe our experience. So how does this work as we move deeper into our practice? In the community where I lived for many years, I supervised fasting retreats where people would come for a week and we would do juice fasts and yoga, meditation, rest. And many people would go through dramatic detox. And really how it worked was pretty simple. The participants would sort of step away from their habitual activities and their habitual foods. They would take in good nutrition. They would rest. They would do good things for themselves. And they would do their best to stay present to what come to the surface. And as the body would begin to rest with all this good nutrition, it would begin to kind of throw off all kinds of toxins. And so there would be a number of kind of like healing crises as the body would be kind of throwing off what it no longer needed. And in that resting, the voice of the body would get stronger. It was almost like the life force would get stronger. We're really doing the same thing. We can kind of view this as one big detox retreat. You've stepped away from your habitual activity. You are pouring in all these pure, good activities of resting, of paying attention, of being in nature, of pausing. And quite naturally, anything that is undigested begins to rise to the surface, to be seen, to be acknowledged, and ultimately to be released. As I like to say, when you come on retreat, you feel better. You feel your anger better. You feel your depression better. You feel your despair better. It's all part of the process. So I'd like to speak a little bit about this practice of inner listening, of what it means to listen to the signal of the body, of what the body has to say. There's a great line that a lot of body workers use that says, your issues are in your tissues. And all of your memories, your pleasant memories, your traumatic memories, that they're encoded in the body. And we have a tendency to ignore the body, to override what the body has to say to us. And we can talk about this sense of what the body says as the felt sense of how the body feels, this whole realm of feeling and sensation inside. I'd like to talk a little bit about how you can contact that, how you can begin to investigate what's arising. But I'd like to read for you a rather long prayer. It's called the Felt Sense Prayer. It doesn't have an author. Supposedly it was written by a Chinese doctor. It talks about this voice of the body and some of the messages it may have for us. So if you like, you can close your eyes. It's rather lengthy. And you might imagine as you listen to these words that this is the felt sense of your body. I am the pain in your head, the knot in your stomach, the unspoken grief in your smile. I am your high blood sugar, your elevated blood pressure, your fear of challenge, your lack of trust. I am your shortness of breath, your fragile low back, the cramp in your neck, the despair in your sigh. I am where you hurt, the fear that persists, your sadness of dreams unfulfilled. I am your symptoms, the causes of your concern, the signs of imbalance, the conditions of dis-ease. You tend to disown me, suppress me, ignore me, inflate me, condemn me. I am not coming forth for myself, as I am not separate from you. I come for your attention, to enjoin your embrace so I can reveal my secrets. I have only your best interest in heart as I seek health and wholeness by simply announcing myself. You usually want me to go away, to disappear, to slink back into obscurity. You're mostly irritated or frightened and many times shocked by my arrival. And from this stance, you medicate me in order to eradicate me. Ignoring me, not exploring me, is your preferred response. And more times than not, I am only the most recent notes of a long symphony, the most evident branches of roots that have been challenged for seasons. So I ask you, I am a messenger with good news, as disturbing as I can be at times. I am wanting to guide you back to those tender places in yourself, the place where you can hold yourself with compassion and honesty. If you look beyond my appearance, you may find that I am a voice from your soul, calling to you from places deep within that seek your alignment. I may ask you to alter your diet, to get more sleep, to exercise regularly, to breathe more consciously. I might encourage you to see a vaster reality and worry less about the day-to-day fluctuations of your life. I may ask you to explore the bonds and wounds of your relationships. I may remind you to be more generous and expansive, or attend to protecting your heart from insults. I might have you laugh more, spend more time in nature, eat when you are hungry and less when you are pained or bored, or to spend more time, if only for a few minutes, being still. I am your friend, not your enemy. I am simply tugging at your sleeve. I ask that you allow me to speak to you in a way that enlivens your heart and your instincts for self-care. You are a being so vast, so complex, so with such amazing capacities for self-regulation and healing. Let me be one of the harbingers that lead you to the mysterious core of your being, where insight and wisdom are naturally available when called upon with a sincere heart. This pausing, this moving from our story to the experience of what is here, is all about sensitizing ourselves to sense what is truly here. We experience the realm of thought. We experience the realm of emotion. And we experience the realm of feeling in the body. It's very curious. What exactly is an emotion? I think of an emotion as a psychobiological event. It exists in the mind, but it also exists in the body. It exists in the felt sense. And turning your attention as a contemplative artist to come in contact with this felt sense can be a very, very powerful way of investigating what's between you and feeling free. Each of these energies, each of these hindrances, has a quality, a mental quality, but also an emotional or felt sense quality. Exploring in one of our small groups today, someone was aware of planning, of just constant planning. What I find for myself is that when I'm lost in planning, underneath that mental activity is some form of anxiety. Some form of this moment is not okay. And that can be a powerful place to investigate. So there are two things I've noticed in this investigation of our experience of the body, particularly when we encounter something challenging, physical pain, times of emotional turbulence, time when your mind might be just caught in some obsessive thinking. One is the importance of coming into direct contact with the felt sense in the body and recognizing it. And what I've found over my years of investigation is that when we turn to how our body is holding an emotion or a thought, that it tends to fall into three categories. Sometimes it's strong and unmistakable. The clench in your heart, the lump in your throat, the burning around your eyes like you're about to cry, or that sick, kind of twisted feeling in your guts, like something terrible has either happened or is going to happen. You can't miss it. Sometimes when we investigate this felt sense, this realm of feeling and energy, it will be like a wave, or it'll flicker, or it'll blip. You'll have a sense of it, like a feeling, some tight feeling, maybe of sadness. It's there, but now you can't find it. Quite often, this felt sense has a quality that is unformed. It's vague. You don't quite know what it is. And the analogy I love in this practice of awakening, borrowed from Joseph Campbell. Imagine a big circle. There's a line through this circle. Above the line is what you're aware of. Below the line is what you're not aware of. The line between what you're aware of and what you're not aware of can move. And as far as I can tell, it moves in your relationship, in your capacity to relax and pay attention. As you relax and as you pay attention, you will begin to feel more. You'll begin to notice more. And in that line between what you are aware of and not what you are not aware of, there can be kind of a vague sense of something. The magic word is something. There's something here. Attending to that is part of the artistry of investigation. So Pat talked a little bit about the acronym of RAIN. I'd like to share a little story with you that might help to kind of illustrate how you can use the investigation of the body and felt sense to come in contact with what's there on the inside. This was on a retreat a while back. Someone in an interview was discussing how difficult the metta practice was. That when it came time for practicing metta, kindness toward himself, it felt like he was hitting a block. And there was something in there about not deserving, just not being deserving of love and compassion. And it was troubling him because he could feel it was some kind of wall between really his capacity to feel love and empathy for himself. So he recognized this, that there was something between him and feeling love, feeling alive, feeling the possibility of compassion toward himself. So he moved to the A of the acronym, if he could allow that. And he said, yes, he could. When we turn toward investigation with kindness, we can investigate on the realm of thoughts, we can investigate on the realm of beliefs, and there can be some merit to that. But it can be quite powerful to investigate how your body holds that experience. We tend to feel more in the midline, in the core of the body, down through the throat, the lungs, the heart, down deep into the belly. So he began to sense what was there. What was the sense of him between him and not being able to take in and really receive love? And began to describe a feeling of tightness, a feeling of clenching in his belly. There are two fundamental elements in the practice. One is recognizing what is here, which is the capacity for wisdom. Not your story, not your preference, but what's actually here. And so he began to describe as accurately as he could kind of the location of that tightness. The second element is the element, the capacity for kindness, for compassion, for empathy, the quality of loving presence. So I was sharing with my group this afternoon of something that the teacher Sokni Rinpoche said, that compassion is the lubrication that allows you to let go. So as you could feel this tight, tight, clenched place inside, he began to explore what it was like to offer it empathy, to hold it with some gentleness. And it began to soften, it began to release. And then it tightened in another place, and he sort of stayed with the process. It's not generally kind of one and done. But as he stayed with it, there are numerous memories that arose. His father was a very hard-driving, very judgmental person, and there is a whole kind of story associated with that. He continued to recognize what was there, to name it as accurately as he could, and to offer it empathy, offer it compassion. And it began to shift. There was no huge cognitive insight for him. there was certainly a reflection, a deep realization of the imprint from his father and his parents. But he described it like a storm had passed through. And he felt more ease. He felt more, a little more clarity. This quality of inner listening to the felt sense requires relaxing and paying attention. But there's something in the quality of care that we have to bring to ourselves. So much of our memories are so deeply, deeply hidden inside in this felt sense. What they respond to, I find, is compassion and kindness. And there's a certain way of holding it that I have found helpful. If you can imagine finding an animal that is hurt or wounded, or imagine a child that doesn't have language yet, that can't tell you what's wrong, holding that animal or holding that small child with that tenderness to sense what it needs is that quality of attentiveness that I find to be part of the alchemical process that allows us to begin to open and sense what truly wants to be seen and heard. So in our practice, we sense what's changing. We see how our relationship to what is changing is a direct reflection on our stress and our suffering. The more you relax, the more you feel, the more you become aware of your reactive patterns, of the habitual stories, of the ways you hold your experience. One of the elements of this practice, which I love, which kind of sets it apart, is rather than just having an anchor and coming back to that anchor again and again, which is a very, very helpful practice, it builds concentration, it builds presence. That when there are times that you experience something strong and persistent, physical pain, strong emotion, a strong mental state, practicing this acronym of recognizing, naming what is there. In the Tibetan tradition, they say some thoughts are self-liberating. You name it, kind of loses its power. Sometimes it's more persistent. To sense, if you can allow your experience, if you can lean into it, and then to investigate with kindness, to bring your attention to this felt sense, to sense what's below the line, and to sense it inside, the quality of feeling, strong and unmistakable, flickering or blipping, vague or amorphous, to hold it with real attentiveness, with true kindness. There can be a revealing, there can be a softening. That quality, the end part of that equation, something you can be so tightly identified with, is more of a sense of non-identification, more of a sense of holding it. And this leads to the third characteristic of reality. You begin to see into the nature of the self. Quite a few years ago, I found out that I was allergic to honeybees. And I found out because I was off on a walk in the woods, I got stung by a bee and I went into anaphylactic shock. And after kind of a long, dramatic way to the emergency room, I lost consciousness in the process. And the next thing I knew, I was on the ceiling, looking down on six people working on this body. And I watched it for quite a while. I remember everything they said. They were pretty frantic and very, very efficient working on this body. And then it occurred to me that that was my body. And the next thing I remember was a sense that I had sort of dropped from the ceiling onto the table, and I heard a voice in my ear that said, "He's back, we got him." It was quite a profound experience for me to watch my body so impersonally, to kind of have this sense that I, however I am, was more than this body. and watching that transition of consciousness from identification with the form. And we tend to identify with our bodies. We tend to think they're ours. And we tend to think that they're going to go on forever. So a great yogi who said, the greatest wonder in the world is that everyone dies. And the second greatest wonder in the world is that no one thinks they will. Part of experiencing reality is coming face to face with the fact that anything born out of causes and conditions is subject to change. This body that you're inhabiting is subject to change. It will get old, it will get sick, and it will die. If you have your arm amputated, are you less here? It's an interesting question. If you don't believe what you believed 10 years ago, are you less here? What we find is that, yes, we inhabit the body, we have these thoughts, we have these beliefs, and yet we are not these things. So there are elements of who you are that are born out of causes and conditions. You are born into this body, which is from causes and conditions. All the cultural influences, your family influences, created certain conditions that have formed your character structure. All those are subject to change. And the inquiry is there something beyond change? Ajahn Chah, who's one of the great Thai meditation masters, he said that to understand no self, or anatta, as it's referred to in Pali, he said to understand it intellectually, your head would explode. He actually said that. He said to come into true understanding, you need to meditate. He said that there is already inside one who knows and one who is already free. He said, turn your attention to that natural awareness and rest there, and everything will become simple. So I thought we might experiment with this, to explore these three characteristics within the senses of change, relationship to change, and this inquiry into not self, to just surrender to what is without manipulating, without changing. So I thought we'd close with a meditation with the flute. There's a particular form of practice you might find helpful. It's referred to as bare attention. And bare attention is the experience of what is happening without adding on any story. When you close your eyes and you turn your attention to sound, you might notice that there is a quality of listening where your mind will identify the sound, label it, ascertain its distance, and then ascertain whether it's of danger or not. It's one quality of listening. The experience of bare attention is this moment-to-moment listening without a story. And sound can be a very powerful practice. So as you close the eyes, you might let your attention open to the sounds around you. And just sense how intimately you can feel this moment. Feel the aliveness of the body, the movement of breath. And as we move into this meditation, you might just reflect on noticing what is changing. Noticing your relationship to what is changing. And you might, in your own way, just sense a quality of natural awareness. There is already one inside who knows and is already free. Turn your attention to that natural awareness and rest there. Again and again, we re-arrive, relaxing into the felt sense of here and now. Aware of what is changing. allowing the moment to flow, letting go. We'll close with a poem called Living in the Body. A body is something you need in order to stay on this planet, and you only get one. And no matter which one you get, it will not be satisfactory. It will not be beautiful enough. It will not be fast enough. It will not keep on for days at a time, but will pull you down into a sleepy swamp and demand apples and coffee and chocolate cake. Body is the thing you have to carry from one day into the next. Always the same eyebrows over the same eyes and the same skin when you look in the mirror. And the same creaky knee when you get up from the floor, and the same wrist under the watch band. The changes you can make are small and costly. Better to leave it as it is. Body is a thing you have to leave eventually. You know that because you have seen others do it. Others who were once like you, living inside their pile of bones and flesh, smiling at you, loving you, leaning in the doorway, talking to you for hours, and then one day they are gone. No forwarding address. Thank you for your kind listening.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.